Welcome, friends, to PC Journey. I have with me Drake from PC. We're part of the Luca Nation Network here with PC Journey, and we're very happy to have Drake join us. Drake, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with me about your PC.
Thank you very much for the invite and for having me on. Sounds like a great first group of guests that you have, and great to be on to chat about cards and all that.
We're very lucky to have been able to secure some amazing people, and I definitely want to thank those amazing people for making themselves open to yourself included, to making yourselves open to jumping on a podcast with this random guy that nobody probably knows outside of the Luca Nation group, Luca's group. But anyway, so the premise of this show, as I've discussed before, is, you know, we're talking about your personal collection. I think everybody enjoys, people want to know what other folks have. Like, we all ask questions, you know, is the market going up, market going down? Where's my collection going? You know, we have our card ladder PCs loaded, but we don't really know who the people are behind them. I know sometimes if you watch the crossover, I know you're on there quite a bit, and you know, we see mail days, people open up cards, they post cards on Instagram, but really, do we walk through people's favorite cards? Do we get the story behind the card? What's the first card? What's your origin story to a degree? But what's that first card you bought? What does that first card mean to you? Do you still have it? Is there a bedrock card that you still have? And as you've collected over time, how has your PC evolved and changed? You know, those types of things. If there's any other stuff in there you want to sprinkle in, and go for it. I mean, the context, the character behind your PC, why you collect, the mentality behind it, all these things, I think, make up your personal collection, and I think they're important. So I'm going to just kind of let you fly. So Drake, before I kick off, tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you into the hobby? How long you've been in the hobby, and why you like to collect cards?
Yeah, so I guess first of all, I'm 39 years old. I grew up in the Memphis area and had a lot of local card shops kind of around that area, and had friends who collected and things like that. And, you know, just growing up as a kid, it was actually a friend of mine, his parents, if he got like straight A's on his report card, would take him down to the hobby shop and would let him buy some packs and all that kind of stuff. And so it was one of those things where, like, I would go with him and would see him, and he would open up packs that, you know, it was like 1993 basketball or baseball or something like that. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool, you know? And so then I kind of got into cards a little bit from there. Now, prior to that, my aunt, actually, when she collected and when she was younger, she actually gave me, when I was 6 years old, she gave me her collection of like 60s and 70s, like football and baseball and all that kind of stuff, in which I still have all those cards today. They're actually sitting right behind me in the shelf. And so that was kind of like my first, like, the introduction to cards. But then really getting into the hobby and like seeing all that and ripping boxes and packs and all that, it was really just like a collection of my friends and I. And, you know, we're fortunate that our parents would take us to the hobby shop and would let us open packs, and, you know, and then we'd trade between each other and all that. And I remember back in the day when like Sam's Club had the hobby boxes, and you could go get the hobby boxes at Sam's Club, so to speak, and things like that. And yeah, so I mean, that's kind of where it all started. It was just between friends and things of that nature. And then, you know, when I got a little bit older, my first job that I had was in a shop there in Germantown, Tennessee called Fanatics. And I worked there on the weekends, and it was like a retail sport. So like, he had like polo shirts and caps and decals and car flags and all that kind of stuff. But he also had a sports card section. Mm-hmm. And so he had singles out there, and he had the boxes. And so, like, so people would come in and they'd be trying to do like trades, and they would be wanting to buy a box of cards, and they would, you know, rip it right there. And I'd see what they had and would get really excited and all that kind of stuff. And I remember when I worked there, you know, he told me, he's like, hey, if you would rather, in lieu of pay, if you'd rather use that to like, to buy cards or buy a hobby box, you're welcome to do that. So of course I wanted to do that. And I remember, you know, I opened up a box at 92 Stadium Club. I got a Favre rookie card, which I thought was really cool, which I still have that one. And then probably the most exciting pull that I had was in 1998, I think it was, or 97, Tops, just base Tops. Ricky Williams had an on-card autographed rookie card. And it was like one in 17,000 packs that you could pull one of those. And I just opened up one pack and it happened to be in there. I was like, that's like the coolest thing ever. Yeah. And that card I held on to for a long time. And then I sold it It was while Ricky Williams was still playing. That was the first card I ever sold on eBay. And I think I sold it for like $750 or something like that. And I just thought I made a killing on the card. And so like that was the first time I'd ever gotten a card really and like sold it. And that it never really occurred to me like, oh, you can get cards and, you know, buy cards, you keep them, you sell them, like all that kind of stuff. It was just like, well, I think I'll sell this card because I don't really have an attachment to Ricky Williams or that whole sort of thing. And so I sold the card and just kind of moved on. So yeah, that's kind of where it all started.
So you sold the Ricky Williams. So the Ricky Williams is like that it's like the seed that started everything, but you've sold it. So what was is there a card from your earlier collecting days that you still possess to this day?
Oh man, like there's a bunch. So like I previously mentioned, the ones from my aunt, I still have that. I still have binders full of like early 90s baseball and basketball and all that kind of stuff. You know, that whole sort of thing. So, I mean, I still have a lot of that like junk type stuff as we talk about. Then, you know, fast forward a little bit, around 10, 12 years ago, I went through and I just had boxes of cards because when you move out of your parents' house, and I moved out prior to then, but you know, my parents were getting ready to move and they said, Drake, there's all these boxes of cards, like you need to take them. and so I took them and I kind of went through kind of halfway and I pulled out the ones I wanted. And at the time when I collected, all I really cared about were rookie cards. Inserts and parallels, like I thought they were kind of cool, but they didn't really do anything for me. And so I pulled out those cards and I remember listing the lot on like Craigslist and I sold it to somebody local here in Fort Smith, which is where I live right now. And I don't know, I'm sure I sold it way too cheap. There's no telling what all was in there. And because it was a lot of it was like mid 90s basketball. And I, you know, ooh, just seeing what the hobby's done over the past few years with all the inserts and all that kind of stuff. You know, I don't think there was anything super valuable in there, but it's kept me up a few times just like wondering kind of what if and all that kind of stuff. But I kept most everything else besides that. And I'm sure we'll get into this more, but you know, growing up in the Tennessee area, I'm a big fan of Peyton Manning. That's what got me into collecting him. And I kept a lot of his rookie cards that I had for a long time. And we'll kind of get into this, like I said, but I had, you know, like the SP Authentic rookie card. I had his Topps Chrome, like all these base rookie cards. And that to me was cool at the time, because at the time when I was collecting, I didn't really understand or didn't really know about all the different inserts and parallels and the value that those would hold. To me, it was all about, oh, you know, here's my Topps Chrome rookie card. Here's a card that's signed by him and that kind of stuff. And so as my collecting and has evolved and as I've gotten more educated around collecting, I've kind of moved on from some of those base cards who are, you know, in their own right are great and they have a place in the hobby, but just for the way that I've kind of curated my PC, they didn't really fit anymore.
Right. So, and I've seen some of those Sign of the Times cards you shared recently. I think you just picked up a gold beautiful card. Those are really beautiful cards. The gold card autograph. Yeah.
In fact, I'm sitting right here. Yep.
There it is. There's the card, ladies and gentlemen. There it is right there. What a beautiful card. The 18, boy, really sets that off. What's the serial number on that?
It is actually number 18 out of 25.
Look at that.
So,
I mean, you got all the boxes checked right there, Drake. That's a gorgeous card. See, that's what it's all about right here. That you, the smile on your face, you know, me being able to see it and go, wow. I mean, the neat thing about the hobby is, yeah, you know, we yearn and long for cards and we kind of, you know, everybody has a different collection and a PC and the value sentimentally or whether it monetarily is different. But you know, there's like this opportunity and permission to enjoy other people's luxuries to, you know, we're in a society where everybody's like, you know, keeping up with the Joneses or, you know, envious of this or that, or frustrated with, you know, how the lack thereof they might have, and maybe rightfully so, but with the hobby, with cards, we're able to actually sit back and enjoy other people's creations, curations of these tremendous PCs that there's blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into it, and they're beautiful, and we could sit back and really enjoy it. And as the collector, there's nothing more exciting than having someone else enjoy what you've done and go, wow, but not with envy, but with just like respect. And it's a beautiful thing. And we need more of that in the hobby. I think that's what one of the reasons why I'm hoping, you know, this series, this show aims to capture that. So, Peyton Manning. So you arrive, Peyton Manning's your guy. You're kind of riding that horse, all intents and purposes. Peyton's your guy. So what is, if I were to, because I know you got some cards in front of you. if I'm to come to you and go, listen, Drake, I know you don't want to hear this, but we're going to have to liquidate everything. You know, you need it for your family. You're going to go buy a beautiful home in Tahiti. I don't know what, you pick the reason. You get to keep 10 cards. Now, I told you, you're going to think about this. You're going to have to keep 10 cards that are sitting out in front of you. Mm-hmm. What 10 cards stay with you?
All right. So I guess we'll just go through order and I'll kind of show them. I guess well.
Your bedrock.
It's in no particular order, but first card would be the Fleur Brilliance 24 karat gold.
Love that card.
Yep. So these are numbered out. This is numbered 7 out of 24. And actually, this is the highest graded one in a Beckett slab, which is kind of cool.
And let me ask you real quick, since we're on the subject, Beckett, PSA, do you care?
No, it doesn't matter to me. Typically if I'm going to sub a card, I'm sending it to PSA. Mm-hmm. In some cases, like I had a Sign of the Times Manning Auto that came back from PSA as a minimum size. And so I sent that to Beckett. And it's not really like a value thing. Like I have no issue buying cards in Beckett slabs. In fact, you'll see that probably a lot of these cards in my top 10, some of them are in a Beckett slab. It doesn't bother me. Like I'm not the guy that comes in a Beckett slab and I'm like, ooh, I've got to crack it out and throw it in a PSA slab. It's more about the card to me than the case that it's in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, all right. So that's one of them. Let's go ahead and get these knocked out. But the full equipment shields.
What a gorgeous card.
So that's a one of one from 2011 National Treasures. This was actually, I got this at the National back in 2021 in Chicago. This was the first, one of the first purchases I made at my first National. So
talk to me about that set, Drake. Why is that set important?
Why is this set important? Well, so
excuse me.
So National Treasures, you know, so 2011 was his last year with the Colts, right? And you know, the fact that it's a game worn shield is important, especially as we've seen more about, you know, player worn and not player worn and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And so there's that piece of it, but then, you know, just the fact that they only wear, you compare football shields to logo man in basketball and all that, there's so much fewer games in football than in basketball. So, you know, you don't exactly know. In some cases, in some cards, they'll tell you what game or what season it came from. And, you know, unfortunately, this one does not say that. But, you know, just knowing that, hey, this came from a limited sample size and the fact that, you know, it's the full shield that he wore right on his neck. You know, sometimes you'll see shield cards and it's, you know, you don't see the equipment and it's just like part of the shield or, you know, or something like that. I think I've got, like, let me show. This isn't in my top 10, but.
No, it doesn't matter. Don't be shy.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you can see that it's got the, you know, the NFL right there. You can see that, but it's not exactly. It's just the piece. It's not the full shield. So it's
full meal deal. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. So you got that right there. So that's the reason why that card's significant to me. And then I'll show kind of its sister. After I got the Colts one, I'm like, well, I've got to represent. So we've got to get the Broncos, you know, full shield.
Wow. Look at that one.
And so this one is from 26 Panini Unparalleled, which, you know, was kind of short lived, but, you know, it's kind of one of those cards. I just saw it and it just popped to me. You know, I'm a big fan of shiny. I like the game worn stuff and all that. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those cards that just really checked all the boxes of me. And of course, like I said, both of these are one of ones, which is really cool.
So when you have a let me think about this. When you have a discontinued product, mm-hmm. What does that do to those cards, in your opinion?
It really depends. You know, I think on a card like that, it's more about what's in the card, you know, and the fact that it's a game worn shield more than, you know, it being some kind of random insert or parallel or something like that, you know, but then you kind of, it takes you back a little bit. You know, you think of like Topps Chrome and whether that's in basketball or wrestling or football or whatever, like we don't have that right now. And to me, like growing up as a kid and, you know, in a similar age to you, like I kind of prefer the Topps Chrome stuff because that gives me more nostalgia than the Panini stuff does, even though I do have plenty of Panini stuff like in my collection. Mm-hmm. And so I'll typically gravitate to, you know, the Topps Chrome and the SP Authentics and Exquisites and the Ultimate Collection and all that kind of stuff, because that's what I remember when I collected. You know, versus more now with the Panini stuff, it's a lot of the newer stuff. And, you know, especially with a guy like Peyton, you know, he only played what, 3 or 4 years into the Panini when they had the license. So he doesn't have a lot of, he still has Panini cards, but there are a lot of post playing year cards.
And will the reboot, if we want to use that word, of with Fanatics coming in with the licensing and probably bringing back and resurrecting Topps Chrome football and basketball, what's that do to those sets? I mean, I got my eye. I'm a Kobe and a unapologetic Kobe Bryant and Ken Griffey Jr. collector. I have one of those free Fleer Brilliance, but it's a PSA 9, but it's not 24 karat. Excuse me. And in Kobe, you know, I'm looking at a Topps Chrome Black Refractor right now, 2003. It's just a 2003 Topps Chrome Black Refractor, but something about the 2000. I mean, those sets are so cool. You wonder when this stuff all gets, you know, comes back out, what does it do to those products that we used to love when we were younger guys? So it's very, those are very good points. Those are interesting points. And when you collect cards, all these things matter, right? They all come to play when you're going to PC a card, right? Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yeah. And it's nice to me too, especially just going back, you know, especially, and I'm not trying to get into Panini versus Topps debate or anything like that, but there's just so many dead gum parallels and all this kind of stuff now. And it's just, it's hard for me to imagine being an ultra modern player collector trying to, you know, if you wanted to chase a rainbow or build a set or something like that, just how hard that would be versus going back when, where it was like, hey, if you had, you know, the gold refractor, the refractor and the base card, like you're good, you know?
Yeah. You don't, it's a little easier to build the sets, to make the runs, all of those things are easier because there's less of it. It's attainable. It's easier to digest as a collector, you know. What else do we have?
All right, so I think that's three. All right, here's number four, and this is speaking of Panini.
Wow.
So this is the Flawless Platinum 1/1 from 2014. I affectionately call it with the bro patch.
The bro patch. That is true. The bro patch. How cool is that?
Yeah. So of course, you know, it's got the game worn patch, and I'm one of those who's, you know, thinks that, you know, a lot of first year sets, especially something like Flawless, is going to be well revered down the line. So, you know, we talk about from an investment standpoint, you know, I guess this was good, but, you know, for me as a, from a collection standpoint, just having, you know, this card right here is, you know, it means a lot. It's first year Flawless, you know, again, he didn't play, but really 4 years for the Broncos. So, you know, I think the design here is just beautiful. You know, we're capturing it pretty good on the camera, but
yeah, actually it's you're getting the hollow there and just the colors. And you know, it's interesting too. You look at, we talk about monetary value. We talk about sentimental value. And sometimes if you think about it, you know, with a PC, it's a PC. We're not going to sell it and we're not worried about the value. Yes, we are. You know, we don't want them to go to zero. We'd love them to retain some kind of value, and they are usually worth money. Stuff that we want to keep are usually, you know, a good store of value. It's a good store of value. It's what you really want it to be.
Yeah, and that's something we've talked about before, I think, is in some group chats and stuff. It's like, are cards really investments, or are they good stores of value? You know, and I think, you know, with an investment, you expect to see returns on it like you would a stock or something like that. Mm-hmm. With a store of value, it's kind of like, you know, you look at your home as a good store of value, potentially. Correct. You know, and things like that.
Because you're living in your home, you're not really going to leverage. I mean, you can leverage it with a home equity line of credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a banker, so I can talk about this ad nauseum, but you can leverage your home. Investment home, obviously, you know, that pays dividends, and in a sense that you can collect rent, and if you cash flow on it properly, then it could, you know, support you. But ultimately, cards or stocks, you get dividends off of stocks, and those dividends compound and pay into your 401k or your mutual funds or whatever it may be. But when you're talking about cards, they don't do that. They may go up and down and ebb and flow in value and fluctuate, but until you exercise, meaning sell them, which if you're a PC, you don't really want to sell them. It's almost just a nice feeling to have. That's why Card Ladder is a tremendous product. I'm not sponsored by Card Ladder. I love those guys. I love their product. I've had it for over a year now. It's just a tremendous tool. And I use it. I look at it every single day. I love the technology that I know Josh has been really has spearheaded a lot of great technology into that. He's done such a terrific job. Chris, those guys are really great. great ambassadors for the hobby. And I think they've done a great job of allowing us to sort of enjoy the values of our collections, you know, and vetting the proper, you know, sales and all of that. So that we can enjoy these stores of value and maybe not investments, but because even if we're a PC collector, we love to collect cards. We want to know there's still, otherwise what would Card Ladder exist for? I mean, there's a transactional aspect of it. You want to be able to know what something sold for, but there's been all the debate on are comps really important anyway, because you're going to buy the card anyhow, right? Someone's going to sell it for less or more. It doesn't really matter. Because if you're going to keep it and you want it, sometimes you just want to spend. And then when some of these cards come into the wild, you never see them ever. You're not worried about a comp. You're just going to try to get it before someone else does. I think Card Ladder serves a great role in like, what's my PC worth? Like, what are these things worth? I think the CL value, I know they sometimes talk it down. I think it's great. I live by it. I think it's a wonderful tool. It is pretty simple when you think about it, but it's a brilliant way to understand the value. I did a lot of pumping of Card Ladder and those guys, but I'm not doing that for any other reason other than I do enjoy the product. And I think it's terrific. And it is a great way for us to see what our cards are worth. And to your point, the store of value, what is the store of value? What is the value of that card, even if we're not going to transact on it?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. No, it's a fantastic tool. Chris and Josh are great guys or whatever. It's kind of funny because, you know, I joke with people, you know, you hear all this talk about the card markets going down and it's falling apart and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, look, if there's ever a Peyton Manning card that I want, I feel like I'm always paying more for it than the last one sold for. So to me, the card market feels very healthy.
Well, it's healthy because of you, Drake, especially with Peyton Manning. You're kind of, you know, I feel the same way with Kobe and Ken Griffey Jr. I'm usually setting new records for some of those cards. And I'm like, I'm there I am. And, you know, it's okay because you're like, yeah, but I you know, there's an emotional connection to these athletes that we PC. And then, so it's a psychological thing. Of course we have that collector gene, but there's also the psychological aspect of, I just love this player.
Right.
And it means something to me. Right. So that's why it's, you know, we there's a little less in the bank account because of it. So.
Yeah. And what's interesting too, is people will give us Peyton Manning collectors a hard time. They're like, man, cause you guys like hoard your cards. And I'm like, well, isn't that what a collector is supposed to do?
Absolutely.
You know? Like they're not supposed to be sending the same card to auction over and over and over again. Like, does that make you a collector just doing that? I mean,
unless you're coloring up, you're trying to like build something, or you might move a lower end card to get that bigger grail or whatever. That's different, but you're not doing that all the time.
Right. No. And you know, for me coming back, you just talk about the journey and all that. It was tough for me sometimes because I'm looking at, you know, these Jordan cards and Brady cards and, you know, Kobe cards and that kind of stuff. And like, you just see them and every sale is just like going, you know, like an incremental rise. Right. And I'm like, man, like, should I start putting my money into those players or what? And I'm like, no, you know, cause I really don't have like an attachment to them. I love them as a player. I respect what they did, you know, in a lot of cases, like I was a fan, but my guy is Peyton Manning, you know? And it's kind of like slow and steady wins the race. And it's just kind of doing this, you know, for his rare and scarce cards kind of over time.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's not a bad thing. It's like, would you rather have the slow and steady like this kind of up and to the right? Or would you rather do the whole, as Chris refers, is like the middle finger where it's
the middle finger. Yeah.
It does like that. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I realize we're kind of getting off topic a little bit, but
there's no off topic. Everything's a topic with this. Yeah,
that's right. But you know, before I really focused after getting back in the hobby in 2019 and really zeroed back in and focused on Peyton Manning, I found myself that, and it was giving me a lot of anxiety having all of these, like, you know, Jason Tatum's and Trey Young's, Luka Doncic and Dak Prescott's and Justin Herbert's and Patrick Mahomes and all that, because it was like, you know, it's, well, like one day it's going up, you know, like this, the next day it's going like this. And I'm like, this just, the anxiety is just like way too much.
Exactly.
And I'm looking at these cards and I'm like, the only reason I have this card in my possession is not because I want it. It's because I think I can sell it for more than I bought it for. And I had to ask myself, like, is that really what I want to do? And like, for some people that works for, and they can do that and do that very well. And I'm like, that's not me. You know, like if I buy a card, my intention of buying it is like not because I want it to go up in value. Do I hope it goes up in value? Do I hope whenever I do have to let go of it 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, do I hope it's worth more than what I bought for today? Absolutely. but that's not my sole reason for wanting to buy a card.
You know, I'll tangent off of that. Vadim Bagels and Wax and I were talking the other day, and we mentioned the same thing. It's like, well, it's kind of hard to prospect when you want to PC a guy, mm-hmm. or it's kind of hard to prospect when you have this like PCing gene where you're just like, well, I want to hang on to the guy because what if he keeps going up? Maybe he's going to be the next, you know, Peyton Manning or the next, mm-hmm. you know, whoever you name the guy, or Jason Tatum's going to be the next Michael Jordan or something. You kind of want to be the first in and keep it and hang on to it, not sell it when you get to a point where you should sell it. Because when you're prospecting, you should sell it. So I did that for my first couple of years, and I ended up just losing money because, mm-hmm. and then I just sold it at a loss just to put it into like a Kobe or somebody long term, where I was just like, why do I keep prospecting? Because it's fun. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Bowman Chrome. I'm a baseball guy. I love Bowman Chrome. It's almost like an addiction. It's like, it's, you say you're never going to do it again, but you just keep doing it. Cause it's so much fun. You get a new class. It's exciting. And the prospect is so fun. But, and when you love the sport, it's even more exciting. But at the end of the day, you prospect these guys. And like, I only have one left. I have a Wander Franco first Bowman Chrome auto. That's it. That's the only current guy I have. A couple Julios, because I'm a Seattle Mariner guy. I'm over here in Seattle and up in the Pacific Northwest. I think there's like two people that collect cards up here. But so I'm a Julio guy, obviously a junior guy, but that's it. And I used to have a ton. And I got rid of Jason Tatum's. I had Lucas. I had all that stuff. And I ended up just going, you're right. I'm the anxiety of like, okay, is this going to basically go to zero someday? Is this going to be worth nothing? Let me get out of this and let me put it into somebody better, someone more long-term, the good store of value. And then it just started clicking. Like, am I really investing here? Are these stocks? Mm-hmm. They're not stocks. Mm-hmm. These are just good store of value. And then you kind of go, well, do I even really want to sell? It should be painful to sell. Like we're talking about these 10 cards. It should be painful to liquidate all these other cards and keep these 10.
Nope. Exactly. And you know, just a further point, you kind of said that there were so many people that were like, oh, you should invest in Luka because he's going to be the next LeBron, or, you know, you should invest in, you know, Mahomes because he's going to be the next Brady. And all of a sudden you get to where you're like, why not just buy Brady cards, or why not buy, you know,
right?
Yeah. LeBron or Kobe or something like that.
Just do that.
And that's kind of what got to a point for me is I'm like, you know, Mahomes is awesome. He's great. He's probably going to go down as a top five quarterback, top 10, something like that. But when I looked, like, you know, like, I'm not a Chiefs fan, even though I live close to Kansas City. I mean, I like Mahomes. I respect what he does and all that kind of stuff. But I'm like, for my money and what means more to me, it's Manning. And so that's who I want to collect versus throwing all this money into Mahomes, who at the end of the day, he's still a prospect, you know?
Well, this hobby, and this is the show where you get to feel unabashed about it. This is where we get to showcase you're not alone. There's a lot of people that have made that shift or have always been there. There's people that have just always been there. Probably a big segment of our hobby were, you know, probably thumbing their nose at all the new folks coming in and some of the folks that came and stayed, like myself. I came and I learned and I stayed. I took my lumps and I learned and I stayed. But I'm staying, and I'm staying as a Kobe and Griffey collector. Mm-hmm. I'm staying with a few of the iconic cards that I wanted to hang on to, the 80s and all that, you know, for baseball and football and all that. But then I have, you know, your Bo Jacksons, you know, all the stuff that you want to have, yeah. But then you stick it out and you continue on as a collector with these great cards that you want to keep collecting because they're fun. They bring joy. Then there's just the whole, okay, the bigger question for me I've run into, and I think a lot of folks will run into, now you're going to stay in the hobby. Okay. How do you budget appropriately for this? Because cards are so expensive that you're going to want for some of these players, because mm-hmm. when you're collecting the right player, they're not cheap.
Right.
There's a good reason they're not cheap. And you know, I know the guys on, we talk about card letter a lot, there's a lot of connection there, but I know those crossover guys, they talk about the side PCs and cheating on your main PC and all that. I always laugh at that because I think it's funny, and it's true, because you're like, well, how many PCs do I really have? How many can I afford to have? Because gosh, I want to have a lot of them. And you kind of are always reconciling that and balancing that out. But, then it comes to budgeting thing, and then it becomes selling things. Like this year, I'm running into it where, like, I can't claim a loss 3 years in a row. You know, eventually I have to take a lump and, you know, and pay some tax, but I'm still losing money because I'm moving these into different. So, you know, where you get in all these conversations, like, how do you manage this from like a tax perspective? So there's so many different angles on this from a hobby perspective. And you probably just need to be claimed as a hobby. That's really what it is.
Yep.
That should be. And that's, you know, how I'm going to be moving forward. I mean, I'm not a business. I'm just selling cards to buy new ones. And that's really, mm-hmm. it's a capital thing. And
I think a lot of folks do that though. And, but it's, you know, just obviously working with a tax professional is the only way to do it. And then, you know, making sure you're doing things right and on the up and up and all that. I always would, I would say sleep better at night, doing it right. And being honest, which is always the way to do it. But ultimately moving forward, how do you collect responsibly?
Yep.
It's a whole other conversation. But anyway, I'll let you keep going with your cars because I know you got more to show me the last.
Yeah, man, sure. So I showed this. I mean, you got to have the whole thing to put together.
Okay, so you got the codes. You got the bro card and the co's card.
Yeah, exactly.
You just missed it at the end. You had a little bit at the end.
It's probably in there somewhere. It's hidden.
It's probably hiding in the card. But that's really cool how you can connect the words.
No, almost exactly. There on that one. So that's that. So that's four. Let's see. Let's go.
Yeah, think hard here, Drake. Remember, the rest of them disappear. Pick the ones you know you won't get.
So this is the PMG.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, look at that.
This is 14 out of 50.
That is gorgeous.
It's kind of hard to capture it on the video.
Those cards, I feel like I've never held one in the hand. I can't imagine what it looks like. I got a Kobe Superfractor coming my way. I cannot wait to look at it. It's the biggest card I've ever bought in my life. But yeah, I can imagine it's not like that, but it's as close as you're going to get because those cards are so gorgeous.
The Superfractors are amazing.
They are, but the PMGs are the ultimate. They're the ones that set the tone for all of it. And just the fact that you own one is, I'm envious. No, I'm not envious. I have a lot of respect for you. Very excited for you, man. That's awesome.
Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. So I think, you know, from my page, I'm a big fan of gold. And, you know, one of my, I guess, collecting journeys or accomplishments is, you know, 2012 was the first year of rear prism. And so he had his playing year Broncos prism 2012 through 2015. And I was able to complete that run of the gold prisms. But of the gold prisms, if I had to just pick one, I think the 2014 is my favorite. And it's really, and I'm sure, you know, from a Kobe, which I've seen his 2014 gold. I mean, just the amount of gold on this card is just really, really nice.
The gold, yeah, as much as we're both Topps Chrome guys, but and Finest guys, but these these Prism golds are just, the earlier years are just tremendous. Like the way that gold dances off the card, it just.
Yep.
Oh, man.
That's great.
That's amazing.
Huge fan of those. All right.
So those are really cool cards.
So this is another one. That'd be different to some people, but this is where he signed with the inscription, the Sheriff.
That's a cool one.
So this was 2013 notable nicknames. And, you know, I share with people, I say, you know, that Peyton Manning, love him, but he's an autograph whore. He'll sign anything. and so, you know, his earlier years, he used his number, right? So he'd use his number. And then obviously this was the notable nicknames. And not every player in this set actually inscribed their nickname on there. So there's very few who actually did that. And so, you know, to get a Peyton Manning autograph that it has a Sheriff inscription, that's just, it's one of those that you don't see very often. So this is one that would be in my top 10 for sure.
Wow. Wow. So where are we at now? Are we at 9?
No, actually we're at, let's see. 1, 2, 3. This is 8. This is number 8. Cool. This is the Atomic Refractor out of Bowman's Best.
Talk to me about Bowman's Best. So I've heard a lot. Is this 99 or 98? 98.
This is 98. Yep.
Why is 98 such a big deal? Like all across the board, though, I feel like that set is pretty. It's a transforming set.
Yeah, I think it. I think it has more to do with, you know, the rookie class that was in that set, right? And just, you know, with Peyton and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was the first year of the Atomic Refractor.
I was gonna say, I think that might be what's really the bellwether, the calling card for that set is this first, because I'm looking at Griffey's. So I'm always trying to find one. They're just hard to find.
Yeah,
there's the preview ones.
Uh huh.
So I don't know the difference between the preview and the regular one. I know I've yet to, I don't want to dig and blow out and try to learn it, but there's a reason the preview is less valuable. There's someone will probably correct us in the comments below. Please tell us why preview is different from the regular Atomic Refractor. Cause I see that a lot. So
yep. I don't know. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's something that I'm actually not sure of or whatever, but you know, I think that with Bowman's Best, a lot of people knock it because there are so many variations in that set. So, you know, that's the number 112. He's got a different one that's got a different number. It's kind of a different motion. It's almost like this one, he was kind of facing to the side. The other one, it looks like he's throwing the ball towards you. And then he's got both of those that are in refractors, and he's got ones that are autographed, and that whole sort of thing. And then there's a best performers. And so there's just so many variations that it can kind of get confusing to people. And then on top of that, there were backdoor copies later on that came out. And so you have to be very careful if you're looking at one of those cards. You know, the, on the Beckett slab, they will slab it and should say missing serial number if it's a backdoor copy. But if you're looking for one of those and you see it out, you know, out there in the wild and it's raw or whatever, just make sure that it's got the serial number on the back of it.
Correct. Yeah, there you go. I got some good healthy warning about how to hunt for those cards. Thanks, Drake. That's always good to have that out there. People can learn from that.
Man, we're like getting down to it, aren't we?
Oh, we are, man. You got to start making decisions. Jeez. It's almost like, what can you fit in your hand when you're running out in case your house is on fire? You know what I mean? I mean, let's pretend you don't have a safe and you got to grab them. And obviously you have them all in front of you, so they're with you. Yep. You got to get the heck out of there, or you're probably worried about getting your kids out of there safely, not your paintings, but you know, you still got to grab them. So.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Well, the one thing that's fortunate is I do have some of my nicer paintings in my vault at PWCC. So, there you go. So that does help. That does help.
That definitely. Yeah, no, that's good.
All right. So number nine, this is the O2 Finest X-Fractor.
Oh, look at that. The blue too.
Yep. And these are numbered out of 20. I mean, the camera's not getting the true shine of these. These things are like blinding.
I know the card, and yeah, there's so many different refractors in it. It's just like, yeah, some people say X-Fractors take away from the card. I mean, everybody has a different opinion on it, but that's what the beautiful thing about our hobby is people, you know, I personally like X-Fractors. I think they're pretty, they're really cool looking. And it also depends on the year. Some years are a little bit more aggressive than others. And some were just like, you know, you can hardly tell.
Yeah. And what's nice about this is that, you know, 2002 Finest was the first year that the X-Fractor was in the football set.
So. Okay. That's another notable thing, right? You have a card like that. It's notable because of the story, right? That's the first of. People love that stuff, but you wouldn't know, but you've done the research and you know that, and that's why it sits in your PC.
Yep, exactly. So that one's numbered out of 20, which is kind of cool because a lot of times the X-Fractors are numbered out of like 199 or 299. Some aren't numbered at all, so it's important to kind of look at that.
So it sounds like the cards in your PWCC vault, someone's going to tell you to just grab 10 cards. You're not going to tell them about the one sitting in the vault.
That's what I'm hearing
right now. Like, yeah, I have some in the vault, but I'm not going to talk about them. They're there, but they're safe and they don't really exist. They exist only in my mind, but they still exist. Why don't you grab two more, man? You can grab one, but you can grab 11 because you know what? You have a little extra room in your hand. Isn't getting too crazy. You got to grab one more. So grab two.
All right.
You know, you got 11th one there.
Yeah. I've got probably 25 here. I could grab.
This is what makes it great, man. You got to think about it. You got to go, what ones would I try to save? Which ones are the ones I got to take?
All right. So, you know, since I first became a fan of Peyton when he was at Tennessee, I've got to have some more Tennessee representation in there. And I think as a Kobe collector, you'll like this one from what it is, but his 98 platinum medallion.
Oh, what a beautiful
rookie card.
That is so cool.
And this is number 33 out of 66.
Such a subtle difference.
Yes.
Right? I mean, the differences are subtle. But this is one of those sets where it's the rarity of the set. Mm-hmm. The fact it's a condition sensitive set. Mm-hmm. And it's the rarity of the set itself. Because they're numbered, right? How many is this one numbered or is it just a pack odds number?
No, it's numbered out of 66. It's a 33 out of 66 there.
33 out of 66. Look at that. Double the number. And there you go.
Yep.
Look
at that. Right there in the middle. Yep. And it's still it's a pop four, 25 years later, basically.
Wow.
So.
And that's a 10?
That's a 10. Yep. Yep. 10.
Look at that, man. What a card. What's that one worth just by chance? We're not worried about the monetary value in this as much, but I'm just curious.
You know, it's one of those that's hard to, I guess, really put a value on. I think the last one that sold publicly was somewhere around $7,000, $7,500, but that was like a year and a half ago, maybe.
Wow.
Something like that. So it's not a
card. So now since the market's gone down, it's like $1,000.
You know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, just give it away. It's scrap.
Just give it away. It's worth like $50. And it doesn't matter to any of us because we don't really care if they're worth any money, right?
Yep. No, exactly. And one thing I shouldn't do this, but you know, let's break the rules a little bit. But
break rules.
We'll call this an honorable mention. As I do in the Ultra set, he does have a pro jersey platinum medallion, and so that one is this one right here.
Look at that dapper Dan there.
Yeah, I know. It looks like a scene. I mean, how great is this? He's playing for the Colts. Yeah. He takes a picture in like a horse barn, right? leaning against the stall there. And
Right.
That's same thing. There, it's numbered out of 66. So.
That's right. That's cool. The way they serial numbered those cards in the 90s, there's something about those serial numbered cards that suggest big time card. Yes. You know what I mean? Like they always mean something when you see those big old fat numbers. Like I just think that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And what's interesting about that set too is in his Tennessee jersey one, that version, he's got a gold medallion of that. And the PSA 10 pop in that is somewhere in the 40s, like 45 or something like that. And then in the one where it's the senior pick in the horse barn, he has a gold medallion of that. There are no PSA 10s, and the PSA 9 is a pop 4, in which I have one of those in PSA 9. But it's just crazy to me the differences where, you know, one gold medallion, there's like 40-something PSA 10s and like 100-something PSA 9s. And then in the other variation, you know, it was so much more short printed, which is kind of neat.
What's great about this and what I like about what we're talking about now, so if anybody in the comments below, obviously you have questions about Peyton Manning cards, Drake is your man. He will answer any question you have. He knows more about Peyton Manning cards, I think, than anybody I know. I've got a short list of people I know in the hobby for the most part, but you definitely know your stuff. So thank you for sharing all that. So let's ask you a question. So are you at 11, or do you still got one more?
So I've got one more to share and
go.
This will make 11. I think.
There you go. Let's do 11. Somewhere.
So I know as a basketball fan, you like the star rubies.
Oh, wow.
This is the 98 star. Oops, let me get over there.
Look at that death stare
for Peyton. Oh, yeah. I mean, with the huge shoulder pads. I mean, think about
how the massive shoulder. Yeah, the massive like 90 shoulder pad. We played football when we were younger. Yeah, those are huge.
That's so awesome. Funny. And so these are numbered out of 35. That's number 14 out of 35. So just another nice rookie set. So.
Star rubies, man.
Oh man, you see that? I mean, that just screams the 90s, doesn't it?
It does scream the 90s. I mean, what's the comparison on value? Because I know the basketball ones are just unattainable. I mean, Nat pretty much has them, right? I mean, he's got them.
Yeah, all. Yeah. I mean, I guess this card today is probably like a $10,000 to $12,000 card, if I had to guess.
I bet. And like you get the basketball ones are just way up there. Oh, it's such ridiculous. such a cool card. Very cool. Okay, so what's the next card? Like, if you could get, what's your target? What's the next grail? What are you looking for? Waiting for to come? What card are you waiting for it to come into the wild so you can grab it?
Yep. So the one that has eluded me is his 98, his essential credentials future. They're out of 7, right? So it's definitely a unicorn card. I know that Spinatron has two of them actually, and then Spur Fan at Tech on Instagram as well. He's got one of them, and I pester them, nudge them frequently, and the answer is always no. Which, you know, like in a way, it makes me want it more because they tell you no, but it's also good to know it's a card that they desire to have themselves, which I think
is great. It tells you something about the card and tells you something about Peyton Manning too, right?
Right.
People like Spinatron, that guy's got, I mean, rivals Nat Turner's collection, I imagine, right? I mean, that guy seems to have everything.
Yes.
Wow, what a cool card. So that's your card. Okay, so final question here. I'm going to ask you, someone gives you $100,000. They go, hey, Drake, I'm going to give you $100,000. I'm not worried about the return on investment because, you know, we're not worried about investments as much here. We're talking about just PCs and putting together great collections. What would you do? Would you consolidate cards? Would you sell some cards? Obviously, it sounds like you try to find a way to convince Spinatron or the other gentleman to, you know, let go of that card. But what would you do with that 100K if you could utilize that right now in a down market in a way, right? How would you maneuver that money?
Yeah. So, I mean, it would obviously go into a Peyton card. What's interesting, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but there's never been a public sale of a Peyton Manning card over $100,000. So you can buy a lot of nice Peyton Manning cards for $100,000. Now the highest one recorded, I believe was in 2019. I could have the year wrong, but it was his contenders rookie auto in a PSA 10. And that sold for like 76,000. Now, if that sold today, it's probably, you know, a quarter of $1 million card, but that's the highest sale. The second highest sale was, I think, when Spinatron got his essential credentials future. And that was, I think, somewhere around 60, if I remember right at the time. And that was back in about a year, maybe about 14 months ago. somewhere around August, September of 2021. So, but yeah, if I had $100,000, the Essential Credentials Future, wherever I could find one, that would be the one that I would go after. You know, that's definitely one that I would like to have. And so that would be the first one, you know, assuming if I could get that for like 50 to 60, that'd be great. And then actually, Peyton's got, an exquisite, Shield autograph one of one. And I actually know the owner of that. His Instagram name is rchaser918. He lives in Oklahoma, so just across the border. And he actually picked that up in a golden auction not too long ago, last year sometime. And I think he paid about $30,000 for it or something. But it's just if you've never seen it, you need to check out his page. But it's just a gorgeous Peyton Manning card from the exquisite set, which is, you know, kind of the gold standard in that mid-2000s football.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool stuff. Well, Drake, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to join me in talking about your PC, sharing these really beautiful cards you have and collected, and some of the insight behind those cards and why you collect them and why you collect in general. Anybody have any questions, any thoughts about this particular episode or anything else you'd like us to cover in these episodes, please let me know. This show is about you. The show is about the collector. The show is about showing off what you have in your collection, and so that we can all see it, we can all celebrate it and be excited about it and talk about the hobby in general too. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. But thank you, Drake, so much for your time. And, you know, again, we'll hopefully have this up soon and we can all enjoy Drake's cards. But until then, take care.
With nearly 40 years as the most trusted resource for collectors, dating back to the first Beckett magazine in 1984, Beckett has been the brand that bridges generations of the hobby. We're happy to be partnering with Beckett and look forward to keeping you all updated on the big things happening at the company in 2023. Beckett, it's the name you know and the name you can trust.